It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. It's just you and me in the studio today, but, well, we're going to have a great episode. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. I'm a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation. I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years, helping them to clarify their objectives and reach their goals. And if you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to the website, thecoachingperspective.com. Well, our topic for today is how to get more out of your meetings. Now, why are we talking about meetings? Hasn't this topic been talked to death? I can't think of any business practice that's been around longer than that of holding meetings, whether they're in a conference room, whether they're in the hall, in the kitchen, in the break room, in the bullpen, at a resort. It doesn't make any difference where you hold them. Nobody likes them. Nobody thinks they work. Hey, catch this. What are the top hits if you Google why meetings are a waste of time? You get, yes, meetings are a waste of time. Here's why I don't care. Or meetings, even more of a soul-sucking waste of time than you thought. Or here's proof that your meetings are a waste of time. Or why meetings are a waste of time. Or hate meetings, 5 ways to stop it. 10 reasons why your meeting is going to be a waste of time. I don't think we should have a meeting after reading those things. And yet, where do we spend our time? The statistics are amazing. We spend the majority of our time, regardless of whether we are the one that calls the meeting, the one that facilitates the meeting, or where there's just one of those poor suckers that happens to be the participant at the meeting, we all spend a lot of time in meetings. 20 to 40% of our time is in group meetings. 70 to 80% of our time is spent in meetings if you include one-on-one. And yet people say that more than half of all meetings are ineffective. Well, why is that the case? It's been around so long. There's been so much written on it. But yet we continue to have lousy meetings. Let's take a look at it. Number one problem is the meeting really even necessary? You know, once a meeting gets established in a business environment, let's have a meeting on Monday at 9 o'clock to talk about sales. That was okay. Let's have it next week at Monday at 9 o'clock. Fast forward 25 years, we're still holding sales meetings Monday at 9 o'clock. Nobody's looked to see whether it's effective, whether it works, whether it's worth the time. It becomes a habit, like getting dressed, brushing your teeth, combing your hair. It just is one of those things that we consistently do. One of the problems with meetings is that we don't measure what they're costing us. If you really knew what this meeting was costing, it would just astound you. I was in a meeting recently where they were talking about whether the board of directors whether the return on investment for the company was worth it for what they spent for the board of directors. And they looked at what they paid the board members and they said, you know, yeah, that return looks okay. But then somebody added in, some bright accountant added in the cost of the preparation, the meeting time that everybody else in the company spent getting ready for the board meeting. Now the number was so astronomically high, people had to start to question it. Nobody ever looks at what would be the outcome if we didn't have a meeting. Would anybody be upset? One of the biggest problems is that we are in the habit of accepting an invitation to a meeting without even thinking twice about it. If you go home tonight at the end of a long work week and a hard day, and your wife says, I was talking to the next door neighbors and they want to go out to dinner, I'll bet you can come up with 10 real good reasons why you should watch Thursday night football instead of going out to dinner with the next door neighbors. But if somebody sends you a meeting invitation on Outlook, you just put it on your calendar. In fact, half the time you don't even have to accept it. It just automatically ends up on your calendar. And there you go, another hour committed. Which brings up another issue. Why are all meetings an hour? What's amazing about the hour-long meeting is that scientific evidence shows that most people's span of attention starts to go away after 16 to 18 minutes. Why are TED Talks 18 minutes? Because they found out that people don't really pay attention after that. They need a change of scenery, a change of topic, a change of environment. And yet we think about having, we never think twice about having an hour-long meeting. I was talking to a group yesterday, and the guy said, I have these regular meetings. They're 4 hours long, and people don't seem to be paying attention. Snooze. 4 hours long. What are you doing to break up that meeting so that it doesn't seem like it goes on forever? You know, there's some things you want to really think about when somebody sends you an invitation to a meeting. What are you going to get out of this meeting as a participant? What is it that the organizer of the meeting is expecting from you? If you don't know, ask the person who sent you the meeting invitation before you accept it. Get on the phone. Walk down the hall. Why do you want me in this meeting? What's the reason for me being here? Again, I was talking with a group the other day. One of the owners of the company said, you know, why is everybody inviting me to every meeting we have in this company? And they said, well, because you're the owner. Well, I don't need to be in every meeting. You don't want my opinion half the time anyhow. You don't want me butting into the work that you're doing. So let's be careful about accepting invitations without knowing what your role is going to be in this meeting. What is the meeting for? You know, whether you're the participant that's accepting an invitation or whether you're the facilitator, are you letting people know what is the purpose of this meeting? Is this a information meeting? We're just going to get together and I'm going to share what's going on lately. Or this is a problem-solving meeting. I need your help solving how we're going to deal with this client or this issue. You know, there's all kinds of reasons to have meetings, but let's define what the purpose is in a short sentence or two. Put it in the meeting invitation. People can look and see, hey, I have no interest in that. I have nothing to contribute. I think I'll skip going to that meeting. Which means that if you're organizing a meeting, there should be an agenda. It should go out ahead of the meeting time. It should have the action list of what were the action items from the last meeting. They should be on there. It should have any material that needs to be reviewed. How many times have you had a meeting or been in a meeting and people go, well, I don't know anything about that project. I didn't know that's what this meeting was going to talk about. Let them know so they can read the material. Tell them what material they should be reading. Make sure if you're going to the meeting, you've reviewed the material ahead of time, that you're clear as to what information, what homework is needed ahead of the meeting. And if you're organizing the meeting, let's start and end on time. I had a company I worked with that meetings were scheduled for an hour, but by the third meeting of the day, they were 2 hours behind. How is that possible? You know, when you reach the time limit, reschedule for another meeting another day, which means that the organizer has to plan out the agenda. How much time is each item on that agenda going to take? Put an estimate of time. You're going, well, I don't know how much time it's going to take. Well, how much time are you willing to give it? You've scheduled the meeting for an hour. Do you want to give that item a whole hour, or do you want to only give it 10 minutes? Have you set up the agenda so that the highest priority items are the ones that are going to be talked about first in case you do decide to go longer on an issue? How many times have you been to a meeting and we're almost ready to end it and they go, we haven't even got to item number 4 and that was the main reason for the meeting. Well, then why wasn't it item number 1? Let's make sure that that agenda is set up by priorities. What do you do with people that show up late at a meeting? You start the meeting on time and people start walking in late. Well, I'll tell you what you don't do. You don't go back and restart the meeting. It's their problem. They dealt breaks. You know, for 18 years, I ran executive forums, half-day meetings, senior executives, 10 to 12 people in the meeting, all type A personality. How do you keep their interest for 4 or 5 hours in a meeting? You need to take breaks. You need to feed them something to eat. You need to let them use the phone, not during the meeting, but during the breaks. And one of the things I learned is that some of the most valuable things that happened in the meeting happened during the break. Many times people just are reluctant to talk about an issue in front of the whole group. But the minute you say, well, let's take a 10-minute break, they run over to the corner, they grab the person who was talking and go, hey, can we talk about this for a minute? I was thinking if we did this, if we did that, and they solve it. right then and there. So breaks can be extremely valuable. You know, I'm very disciplined about starting and ending the meeting on time, but I'm not disciplined about ending the break on time if the break has turned into an informal work meeting. Now, if the break has turned into everybody talking to Paul about his vacation, then we're going to end the break right on time and get back to work. Every meeting needs to produce, in my opinion, an action list. The action list is really a list that says, here's the topics that were on the agenda. Here's what we decided for each item on the agenda, if there were any decisions reached. Hopefully there were. And here's the action items that are outstanding as a result of the meeting. And here's who's responsible for the action item. And here is who is going, or not who, but here is who's responsible for it and the due date that it's supposed to be done. And the next meeting starts by reviewing the action items. And the agenda that's set out has the action items attached because, guess what? When you send out the agenda a day or 2 days ahead of the meeting, that's when most people will work on the action items that they were going to do last week. So you want to make sure that you do that. You've got to have some ground rules for every meeting, you know, just the same as we have here in the radio studio. Paul's not allowed to eat food that smells really strong because it makes me hungry and distracts me. We can't talk while we're on the air with a side conversation that we don't want you to hear. What are the meeting rules? More and more companies are starting to set a rule that no electronic devices whatsoever are allowed in the meeting. Now, I've got mixed emotions on this because I'm sort of attached to my iPad at the hip. I don't go anyplace without it. But yet I know there's many people that bring an iPad or a laptop to a meeting supposedly so they can take notes. But I look over and they're doing email. They're surfing the internet. They're doing something else. So besides silencing the cell phone, many companies are starting to say, hey, no electronics whatsoever at all in the meeting. One of the things that helps a meeting is just because you're the organizer of the meeting doesn't mean you have to be in charge of everything you don't have to be the facilitator for every topic. It's a really good idea, and it helps keep the attention span, keep people's attention really clear, is you may take the first item, and then the next item, you might have somebody else be the leader on that item. It helps people learn how to run a meeting. It gives them facilitation practice, but it also just sort of adds a little bit of variety. As the organizer of the meeting, also, you are the one that is responsible for making sure that things don't get off track. It's up to you to keep the person like me that wants to monopolize the conversation from doing that. It's up to you to keep the person like Paul that's a little quieter to call on them and encourage them to participate. It's all about communication skills. You don't want to embarrass people in a meeting. You don't want to beat them up. But at the same time, it is up to you to control the meeting. It was interesting. The other day, I was reading the Wall Street Journal, and one of the front page items was the importance of soft skills in hiring people today. It turns out that we've been hiring a bunch of people that are technically qualified but don't have the ability to communicate, don't have the ability to lead, to inspire people, to encourage them, to keep them motivated. All of those soft skills that are needed to make group efforts work. And in today's environment, everything is done by a group or a team. So as a facilitator in a meeting, your soft skills are critical. You set the tone for the meeting. Is this going to be fun? Is it going to be painstaking, painful work? Or is it going to be enjoyable and yet still keep this meeting on track? Part of that skill is that you need to summarize so that everybody knows what just went on. Five or six people talk. You've reached a decision. Does everybody know that you think that the decision has been reached? Does everybody know who the two people are that are walking out with action items? At the same time, you need to control the participants, and you as a participant need to control yourself so that you don't restate what's just been said, and you don't say, well, what Paul meant to say was this. You know, talk about it yourself. Don't reiterate what other people are doing. At the same time, what studies have shown is that if you want to have a powerful presence in the meeting, you need to participate in the first 5 minutes. If you can say anything in the first 5 minutes and be recognized by the chairman, by the person running the meeting, then you will be more listened to. People will be more aware of you in the meeting than if you wait to the last 5 minutes of the meeting to ever say anything. So you want to get your points out. You want to understand that in a meeting, especially a problem-solving meeting, there may be some conflict. That doesn't mean we're going to get into a fight, but it's okay to not have everybody agree. Just so long as your disagreements are part of the meeting and not side conversations. You know, you don't want to make a statement or listen to somebody else's statement, and when they're done and the next person is talking, you lean over and start continuing the conversation with the previous person. As a facilitator, one of the tools that works really, really well is when people bring up something that isn't on point. In other words, it would be a good topic to talk about. So somebody interrupts and says, Doug, I'd like to talk about how we delegate the action items here. Well, we're talking about how to run a meeting, not about how to delegate, but that's sort of related. It's a good item. So I'm going to say, you know, that's a good point. Let's not get into it right now. Let's continue with what we're talking about. But let me write it down on this post-it and put it up on the wall, put it in the parking lot. Now, by writing it down and sticking it to the wall, I've acknowledged you and your idea, so you don't feel shut down just because I'm not letting us talk about it right now. And at the end of the meeting on the agenda, I've allowed 5 minutes or 10 minutes, whatever is appropriate, to talk about the parking lot items. And if we can't get to it, then it's up there, and I'm going to be sure to put it on the agenda for the next follow-up meeting. Parking lot is a good way to deal with things. You know, I want to share a tool. I don't know where this came from. It was taught to me. It is a tool that I used in problem-solving meetings in the executive forums business, and it's a tool that I encourage my clients to use. When somebody has a problem and they're bringing it to the meeting, here's the procedure that I like to use. Let's say Paul's bringing a problem to the meeting. Paul, why don't you describe to the group what the issue is that you want us to solve? And Paul describes the problem. Okay, now that Paul's described the problem, we're going to go around the room, and everybody has a turn asking one question that would help clarify their understanding of the problem Paul has just asked us to work on. When it's your turn, you can't tell a story. You can't tell that you've had a similar situation. You can't give a solution. You can only ask one question to clarify your understanding of what the problem is. When we've gone all the way around the room, we keep going around the room till nobody has any more questions about their understanding of what the problem is that we're trying to solve. Then we go back to Paul and we go, okay, Paul, you've heard the questions. Would you restate what the problem is now that you want us to solve? 99% of the time, my observation is that the problem that Paul now restates is significantly different than what he did the first time, because it's now more clear in his head what he really meant to say and what he really wanted us to work on. You know, there's a major difference between Eastern culture and Western culture when it comes to meetings. In the Eastern culture, the statistics show that something like 90% of their meeting time is spent defining the problem, as we just talked about it. And then 10% is spent on talking about solutions. Western culture, we spend 90% of our time working on suggesting solutions and only 10% on defining the problem. What's the difference between those two approaches? The Western approach produces lots of solutions to what really wasn't the problem, as we've just talked about in how to define the problem. So make sure that in your meeting, even though the item's on the agenda, that everybody really understands what the issue is that we're trying to solve before they launch into solutions. And when we start launching into solutions, we really are not interested in your storytelling. Unless your story is really, really a solution, we don't want to hear about the fact that you've had a similar problem. That's not what we're talking about right now. At the same time as we're working on ideas here, we talked about the parking lot, we talked about it defining what the real problem is, we talked about not being long-winded, about the facilitator's obligation to involve the people that are more silent and less reluctant to participate, about no private conversations. We also need to talk about the fact that, you know, we can't let the discussions in the meeting be ruled by what I'm going to call groupthink. And groupthink is the rush to come to a conclusion. In other words, we're on the third item in the agenda. We're getting close to the end of the meeting. I'm really tired today. I was up late last night. Paul suggests a solution and I go, hey, that sounds good to me. Let's just accept it and go on. I haven't really thought about it. I haven't really agreed with it. I'm sick and tired of talking about the problem. So let's just agree so that we can go on to the next item because that's what I'm interested in. Or, gee whiz, Paul seems to be right most of the time. So rather than thinking about it, I'm just going to go, hey, whatever Paul wants to do is good with me. Or I don't like conflict. So rather than groupthink, I just avoid anything that's going to be a conflict. You know, we've always done it this way. Let's just do it that way. You know, we have to be careful that as a group, as a facilitator, that we're not influenced by the person who is the loudest, who talks the most, who is the most aggressive. It may be the quiet thinker who's reluctant to say anything, who makes a very brief statement. Maybe that brief statement carries the most weight for us solving this problem. You know, there is a document, if you use Word, who doesn't use Word? There's a document that used to be in Word's templates when you purchased it. It's not there anymore, but it is available in their online version of templates. And if you look under online and business and you look for meeting notes or meeting minutes, you find what I think is a great template that shows how you can, it's a blank like all templates, and you can fill in, you have a place for each agenda item to be listed, how much time you've allocated to it, who's going to be the discussion leader, what is the issue being discussed, two or three lines to summarize what the discussion was about, two or three lines to summarize what the conclusion was that was reached, and two or three lines showing what are the action items, who's the person responsible for it, and what is the due date for it. It's a great template. I really encourage you to take a look at it. If you can't find it, just drop me a line, Doug at the Coaching Perspective, and I'll send you a PDF of it, but I think you can find it if you look at the templates. The other thing, whether it's for yourself or for the group, there's a lot of value to really looking at how effective the meetings really were, of taking some time, either in the group or just personally, to review how did this meeting go? Did the meeting start on time? Were the guests introduced? Did we know everybody who was there? Were the agendas available? Was the purpose of the meeting clear? Was there a transition from the last meeting, meaning that we recapped or went over the action items from the last meeting? Did we stay on topic and only discuss one item at a time? Was the facilitator controlling the discussion so that only one person talked at a time? Was the discussion held to be relevant? Did we stay on top point? Did the chairman summarize what the discussion was about? Did the discussion move along at a workable pace? Were all the people in agreement, and was it clear what action items were assigned and what the due dates were when the next meeting was going to take place? Did everybody participate? Was progress made? Did we learn something in this meeting? And then the soft skills part of the meeting. And this is what I think kills most of the meetings. You know, were the right people in the meeting? Was everyone there on time? Did they know one another? Was there a warm-up before the meeting was started? Was was the meeting a little light? In other words, just because this is serious doesn't mean it's a funeral. Going to work. I mean, how many people, what do you have to do tomorrow? Somebody says, and you go, I've got to go to work. You know, most of us are happy to go to work tomorrow. It means we're going to get paid, means we get to do what we like, means we get away from the honey-do list at home. It means we get into an air-conditioned office. I mean, there's lots of good things about going to work. There should be a lot of good things about the meeting. It doesn't have to be so intense that there's no humor during it, that there's no human connection. There needs to be a open, free exchange of ideas. You know, if those things all happened, would we feel different about meetings? If we only went to meetings that we were either able to contribute or that contributed to information we needed, one, we would eliminate at least half the meetings we go to. So automatically we've got some extra time back. Two, if the meetings were well run and stayed on point and summarized and documented, boy, things would happen. It's always about execution. So all of a sudden, the meetings would become more effective. You know, if you look at the things we talked about today, it doesn't take that much to convert meetings from the worst thing in the world to something that can be very helpful. There's no way they're going to stop. If you keep doing what you've been doing and expecting different results, Drucker says that's the definition of insanity. How about going to your meetings next week with a different attitude? How about looking at the invitations to meetings with a different attitude? How about checking your calendar and not automatically accepting things? How about questioning those meetings that are regularly scheduled, reoccurring wastes of time? And instead saying, let's put on the agenda whether we should have this meeting. One of the items I like to put on my agendas that's covered at the end of every meeting is, do we need to keep having this meeting? Is the format we're using valid? Should we do something different next time? And people make suggestions. Well, that's what I have to say about meetings. It's not all good, but I think it could be, and they're not going to go away, so why don't we make the best of it? Look, if you're listening to our podcast, I want to thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com, and be sure to check out our archives for shows with great guests, not just me, guests that have lots of good information to share. Speaking of guests, we've got some great guests coming up here in September. Be sure to look at the newsletter as it comes out weekly and check to see. And if you can't make the show live, then follow up the next week and listen to the podcasts. Speaking of guests, if you'd like to be in the show, we're always looking for interesting people to talk to. Just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Well, I hope that you enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas, new insights on meetings and how you can use them to be more effective, with ideas that you can use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug DeFeller.